Hello and welcome to Multiform. Every week we get together to talk about Xbox news, rumors, and games we're playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show at questions@multiformpodcast.com. I'm Tim Shelton, and this week I'm joined by Gus Harden.
Hello.
And Spencer Rain, who just stepped out of the room to do something really quickly. So hello from him. Yeah, also, this is episode 218. So a lot to talk about this week. A lot of we're finally getting into the thick of it in the fall season. We had the Forza Horizon 5 anniversary update this week. And next week we have A Plague Tale Innocence and DC Gotham Knights, which I preloaded on my console. So I'm ready to go with that. So, Gus, since Spencer hasn't come back yet, why don't we start with you? What have you been up to this week?
So I played an old game, which is extremely typical of me. I installed via Game Pass Middle-earth Shadow of War. So I never even played the first one, which is Shadow of Mordor, but I decided I wanted to try the Shadow of War because I saw something before it on like TikTok or YouTube, and I was like, you know what, that looks kind of fun, I'll play that. And yeah, that game is a bit more like, it's like more like violent than I thought it'd be. Like when I like interrogate an orc and like find a captain, I like explode his head afterwards, and then which is kind of cool but also kind of gruesome. And then the one thing I noticed is that like the cutscenes and like acting is like kind of like mediocre, but it is what it is. It's fine enough. I feel like that's like fairly indicative of open world games from 2017, which is when it came out. So it's a 5-year old game.
Yeah, it was a launch game for the Xbox One X.
Yes. So, but no, I mean it looks good. It's fine. I played through the very first mission and got to like the open world section and decided to give it a rest because it was like 10:30, I think. And I was ready for bed. I'll probably play more of that, get more into it. Even though I have so many other games that I should be playing, like Cyberpunk and Far Cry 6, because those actually came out within the last year.
So I've also been thinking about playing Shadow of War, but for a different reason, because I was just watching Rings of Power. It just had its finale on Friday, and that made me want to play more, you know, and do things in the Middle Earth universe. But I'm the opposite of you. I didn't play Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor, or no, I'm sorry. I did play Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor, but I've never played Shadow of War, the sequel. And, also, at launch, it was kind of like marred in like microtransactions that affected the economy. And like a year or two after release, they patched all of that out of the game. So I'm curious. You and I are going to have a very different experience than what people had at launch, because it was like buried in microtransactions. But then they removed all of that later. So now playing this years later, we're kind of getting the best version of the game. I see also on here. Oh, go ahead, Gus.
No, I was just saying thank goodness, because I would hate for that to be a thing, having to pay for things.
Yeah, and I see also on here, Gus, you're playing the usual of Pokemon on Game Boy. Yes, and Smite.
I've moved to from Gen 1 predominantly to Gen 2, so I'm now playing Silver instead of Blue, which what I had been playing, and I'm in the process of trading between my blue save and my Silver save. Which is like, man, it is so wild. The step up in terms of like gameplay mechanics and just like overall like quality of life improvements that they made between and like the, I want to say four years between the two generations, between Gen 1. So red, blue, yellow in America, and then they had green in Japan. But between those and then Gold, Silver, and Crystal, it is like a almost like crazy difference in terms of like just quality of life improvements, like being able to rename your Pokemon boxes, so that way you can tell what's what. It telling you how many slots it has left. Like that wasn't even something that happened in Gen 1. So like when you have 20 spots in the box, and then but you wouldn't know how many unless you went into the box and counted by yourself in Gen 1, which is like, it's like, seems like something that would just be like in there. It's like you would think you would always want to know how many in there, but like it wasn't in the first games and it's in the second games, and it's like a huge difference. It shows you pictures of what it is. So like, let's say you renamed something and you haven't used it in a while and you forget what it is. Well, without having to actually empty your party out of one slot and then get the new one, exit out of the PC, reopen the menu and look and see what it is. It'll show you a picture of which Pokemon it is. Not only that, but also more color being added. The experience bar on the bottom underneath your health bar is like also another thing that's like a massive like quality of life improvement. Being able to move your moves around inside of like the actual move list, that wasn't something you could do before. They have a move deleter, which is nice. Like let's say you, because you have the HM moves that you can teach your Pokemon, like the classic ones like fly, surf, like the ones that allow you to do like the world traversal, and those were non-deletable moves. So let's say you accidentally put one on a certain Pokemon and then you didn't want it there. Well, you couldn't do anything in Gen 1, but in Gen 2 you can delete a move like that, which is nice. But man, it was like crazy, like going from playing like a Gen 1 Pokemon game from 1996 and then playing the new ones that are from, I want to say 2000, maybe 2001. It is a massive, massive difference between the two, and a little bit more nostalgic for me, I want to say, because I played Gold the most. I put Gold and Crystal the most. So for me, it's a bit more nostalgic than Red and Blue, which I also play a lot of Red. And although my brother and I have both had Game Boys, we never had trade links. So I was never able to get the exclusive Pokemon that you had in Blue because I only ever had Red, and so did he. And I don't think my parents like knew that was like a thing. But not that I'm like trashing on them for that now, 20 years later. But it was something that I never got to experience. So it is kind of cool. Plus the legendary Gen 1s getting new sprites and new pictures in Gen 2, having all these updates done to them is like kind of, so it's kind of crazy seeing like the legendary birds in Gen 2, which I don't think I had ever seen before because you would have to have had traded them from Gen 1 to Gen 2.
So did you already beat the games, Gen 1?
Yeah, so I beat Red and I beat Blue. And so it was easy, okay, because I beat Red. And then I had all these Pokemon that I had leveled up. So all I had to do was defeat like a certain gyms in Blue. And then I can now use those Pokemon because they have that, like, that mechanic where it didn't matter if you weren't trading, but because you could always level a Pokemon that you caught and they would always listen to you. But if you had traded, let's say like you traded for like a level 60 Zapdos and you did not have the badge that allowed you to command level 70 or higher or level 70 or lower Pokemon, then sometimes like when you try to do the move, it just wouldn't listen to you. Like it would choose a different move. It would say, it's like, oh, they're not listening to you. Or it would like go to sleep or whatever. So it's like that was like a gameplay mechanic to keep people from being able to just trade like between themselves, I guess, like trade a level 2 Pidgey for less something that's level 70 and then just steamroll the whole game so you can get done with it and then move on and start looking at everything else. And that's also something that exists in Gen 2 and I think even onwards. So although even I have all these things that I can trade from Gen 1 to my Gen 2, I still had to get the badges that are required to command the level 70 or lower. But yeah, I did beat the Elite Four, technically five, because you have to face your rival. And now I'm just focused on, because I think I talked about this a little bit last week about how I actually watched this video and I liked the term that the guy used. I don't remember who it was that I watched, but it was called the Holy Grail of games, to be able to return to the game world of the prior game in the game that you already like that you are currently playing. It's like, this is something that happened in Red Dead Redemption 2 for anybody. I mean, this game's 4 years old now, so I'm not even going to put a spoiler alert on that. Unless, although, spoiler alert, you end up in like Blackwater, the Blackwater area, which you played in the first game as John Marston.
Yeah, like half also, the Red yeah, Dead 1 like, map is in Red yes. Dead 2, but you don't get it to it till yeah, the end of the game.
Because the epilogue is so expansive. So without unless you're on PC using mods to go there with, as Arthur, you won't be able to go there at all. But that is something. So the Kanto region is the region in Pokemon 1 that you play in. The Johto region is the one you are in the second generation games. However, the Kanto region is available after you defeat the Elite Four in the second generation game, and then you can now move on and you can catch some of those first generation Pokemon. I don't know, the thing is, I don't know if you can get the legendary birds in them though, but I could be wrong. But I think you have to defeat the Elite Four and like do a whole bunch of other things that you have done before you're allowed to actually travel back to that area. And then like the final boss is Red from the first game, like, and so he has like all like the third iteration starter. So like he has a Venusaur, he has a Blastoise, he has a Charizard, I think he has like a Pikachu, and then like a Lapras and something else, I think, that were like generation one exclusives, which I think is really cool. And like, and like it's something that you don't have to put in games, but I think that is extremely cool that that's like in the game. But this will just save me some time from having to do that, because the ultimate plan is eventually to go to Crystal and complete the Pokédex inside of Crystal, because there are, because I was like, well, I'm not going to buy gold because that's just stupid, because you can get the Pokemon that you can't get in Silver, you can get in Crystal, but some of the Pokemon that you can get that you cannot get in Crystal, you can also not get in Gold, so it makes the most sense to buy Silver. So I got Silver, and then Crystal will be next, because I think it's a little bit easier to get the legendary beasts, which are like the dog ones, or like the Suicune, Raikou, and Inkay. Yeah, that's like the plan, is to get all of those as well. And then I think Serebii is the like the Mew version of Gen 2. So because Mew was something I had to use the glitch to get, because they used to only give Mew away at like Nintendo giveaways, which obviously don't exist anymore because this game is over 20 years old. So you have to do a glitch to get a Mew. And so, yeah, that is my plan right now. But not, I mean, this is an old game. But in case anybody was wondering how those old games you kind of work, or if I'm maybe fluffing up some nostalgia for you, that's just kind of what I've been getting into. And I'm in the middle right now of transferring between Blue and Silver.
It's a good year for nostalgia, yeah. Video gaming, playing old stuff, since yeah. We had fewer big budget.
Yes, but new games I will say year. I am very ready, and I already told my girlfriend, I was like, you're going to lose me on October 28th when Modern Warfare 2 comes out. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked for the next 2 weeks. We got Plague Tale, which is me and Spencer. We got Gotham Knights, which is at least me, maybe Gus, and then Modern Warfare 2. But we're going to talk about more of that in the news. So with that, let's talk to Spencer. Spencer, what have you been up to? Looks like you've had a more productive week now that you're kind of settled down in your new home. Actually got some game time in.
Yeah, just a little bit. I played the first like half-ish hour of Deathloop. And it definitely felt like, I can definitely feel the Dishonored vibes. It kind of like, I almost feel like these Bethesda first-person shooters all kind of feel very similar. Like, I kind of feel a little bit of Wolfenstein influence, a little bit of Doom influence. I don't know, just the way that, you can just tell that you're playing a Bethesda FPS, or at least it feels like it is to me. Like, it's so different than from, like, Battlefield or Call of Duty or, you know, any name another FPS, on the market. But yeah, it seems interesting. Like I said, I'm only like a half hour in, so don't really know what to really expect or kind of what the game's really going to be about. I don't know. I mean, like you just said, Plague Tale's coming out this week, you know, the day after this episode goes live. And then the following week is, or the end of this week, actually, because it's the 21st now, right, for Gotham Knights?
So yeah.
Friday, which, I think.
Are you going out of town on Friday the same as we are?
Yeah, I am. So I won't actually be playing it, but I do want to get Gotham Knights. I'm ready for it. I'm ready to jump on the train.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it in the news, so I'll save my Gotham Knights discussion for then. But I do have it preloaded. I went ahead and bought it. But like you said, so Spencer and I had a family member pass away, so we're going to be traveling on Friday to go to the funeral services. So we probably won't have played any by next week's show. We'll probably record next week's show late, which I'm sad about, but obviously it is what
gotta
it is.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get a pick, you know, this is my second funeral in a month, and you can't pick how these things turn out. It's just tragic anyway. So, yeah, we won't have probably any thoughts on it next week, but the week after I'll played a bunch.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, you know what else happens next week? So it's kind of a lot's happening. I'm not going to say any spoilers because there's already spoilers out there, but Black Adam comes out on Friday, and I was kind of mixed on Black Adam until I saw some of the comments The Rock had been making recently that lead me to believe this is potentially a DC movie I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I saw him jokingly say some stuff, and then now that I got people kind of running wild like it always does.
Yeah, and there's been some leaks, which I unfortunately saw one of, but to be honest, I'm not mad about it because it made me happy. It was a leak that I was like, yes, that's what I want.
Talking about movies, I feel like this, just like video games, like this fall, like ever since like Top Gun and some of those other summer movies, I feel like the movie scene has been kind of dead this year too.
Yeah, it's been few and far in between. Normally in a given year, like before the pandemic, I would have probably had a movie that I was really hyped for at least like once a month. And this year I've seen a total of 3 movies in theater, which is very low for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I saw Top Gun, and I think that's all I've seen this year.
I saw Top Gun, Multiverse of Madness, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man was last year.
Nope. Was that the most recent Jordan Peele movie? I think, yeah. Nope. I saw Nope in theaters. But there just hasn't been anything. You're right. It's such a weird time with post-pandemic. I don't know if you saw this, but Sony said I can't remember if it was Herman Holst or Jim Ryan that made the comments that basically the stuff that they planned to come out at launch for the PlayStation 5 because of the pandemic was basically some of it was spread out over a 2-year period. So like their launch window stuff that would have come out in the first 6 months after release ended up being spread out over 2 years. So God of War Ragnarok, which comes out next month, was originally planned as a launch window game, which would have come out a year and a half ago. And I think we felt that on the Xbox side too, but they haven't said as much. Also, I should comment, my voice is escaping me. I've been sick for about a week, so that's why I sound raspier than normal. So forgive me if that is irritating to you. I'll try and give it breaks from here and there and let Spencer take over some of my normal hosting. So anyway, you said Deathloop.
Yeah,
Deathloop. Anything else?
Yeah, so I did play probably the most of what I played this week. I just kind of got into a little quick Mass Effect 3 on the Mass Effect Legendary Edition rut. I was playing that today, actually. I'm not going to get into that, obviously, because we've talked about that enough on this show over the years. And another game that came out on Game Pass this week, I think Scorn was kind of the big one that people were talking about, obviously. But another game that came out this week was called, this game called...
Hang on. Just want to say real quick, Scorn reviews did not look very positive. Right. On.
I know. Yeah, I didn't think the reviews were positive, but it was a big name. Like, people were anticipating this game.
Yeah, and it does fit a very specific genre. It's got a 72 on Metacritic, so that's not horrible, to be
honest. Yeah, it's like Saints Row, right? It was about the high 70s, something. Low 70s, I mean.
Yeah, so, high I mean, 60s. That's not terrible. But yeah, it's also great. A very macabre, like, specific genre of game.
That I feel like there's a lot of broad appeal between right now and January. You've got, for people who like these games, I mean, you've got Scorn, you've got Callisto Protocol, you've got the Dead Space remake, and you've got Resident Evil 5 remake, which I feel like are all kind of in that horror genre.
Different types of horror, but similar.
Okay,
so sorry I cut you off there, and then okay. You were saying. I
didn't really play. So I downloaded this game called Medieval Dynasty off of Game Pass. I think it came out on, I want to say, maybe even the end of last week. And basically, if you've played Kingdom Come Deliverance, imagine that, So like very janky, very like Xbox 360 looking graphics. No voice acting though, unfortunately, like unlike Kingdom Come Deliverance. But kind of like a city builder, but like a first person city builder where you're in a medieval village doing it. But I just downloaded it because I was like, yeah, why not? It was like 6 gigabytes too. So, you know, it downloaded in like 30 seconds, basically. I didn't play enough of it to really form an opinion. It was just kind of a jank. Like I said, if you've played Kingdom Come, you know that game is a little jank. But if that's something that, you know, kind of piques your interest as far as like a first person type of city, village builder, whatever you want to call it, in that medieval setting, which we're getting a lot of with, you know, with Plague Tale this week and then Penitent in November. I feel like that's a genre that's really in right now, among video games and even other popular media. So yeah, that was there. Trying to think, that was pretty much the only things that I got into this week. I mean, there's other stuff I want to talk about that's not like what I played, but we don't have to worry about that right now.
Do you want to talk? You want me to go and well, talk about it? I just was going to for the end. Or
I was just going to mention that Starfield video that you posted in our group me. People were talking about that this week on Twitter. It's kind of the first real substantive Starfield nugget we've gotten since June. You know, since the Bethesda and Xbox show, I would say.
Yeah, I didn't include it in the news because I wasn't sure whether it was worth talking about every time they release a video. But it's actually a perfect place to talk about it here at the top of the show. So, yeah, let's talk about it. There was basically three nuggets they dropped in it. It's a new series they're calling Starfield Questions, where they take questions from the community.
Constellation Questions.
Okay, Constellation Questions. Sorry. And they interview, this one was
the man himself.
The man himself. And I assume he'll do the rest of them. Not Pete Hines. Why? Oh my gosh.
Todd
Why
Howard. Did I say Pete?
Todd Howard, which, by the way, did you see Pete Hines got promoted? He's now, what's his new title? Oh, Pete Hines. I'll look it up while you talk about
Director Todd of Howard. Marketing.
Yeah, but he got a new title.
I'm kidding. I just said that. I guess that was his old title. Yeah, I mean, I guess like the biggest thing was they talked about the dialogue system and people were talking about how I think Starfield has like 100 or 200,000 lines of dialogue and Skyrim had like 60,000 and Oblivion had like 30,000. And that's without a voice protagonist. Fallout 4 had 60,000 and Skyrim had 30,000, I think is what it was. And then Starfield is like 120 or 200,000. So more than double the lines of dialogue.
I think it's way more than that, actually.
I think you're probably right. I need to find the graphic because I did see that.
It's in their video. I'm on my YouTube watch history right now trying to find the video. But I also watched a bunch of random stuff while we've been talking, gameplay of some of the stuff we've been talking about. So it's not like right at the top of my history.
252,000 plus.
Yeah. So over double.
Compared to 111K in Fallout 4 and 60,000 in Skyrim.
Okay,
that was
real
the big
quick.
Thing.
Behind his old title was Senior VP of Global Marketing and Communications at Bethesda Softworks. He's now been promoted to Head of Global Publishing at the studio. So VP versus head of global publishing. So now he's over more than marketing and communications, I guess. Either way, congrats, Pete Hines. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the big nugget, was just that there was like an insane amount of dialogue, especially again, considering your protagonist isn't voiced. They kind of brought the Persuasion minigame back from Oblivion days. It hasn't been obviously it wasn't in Fallout 4 or Skyrim. So a new kind of version, modernized version of that is going to be coming back for,
it sounded
game,
like you have like
interesting
a currency for Persuasion that you like are spending in a conversation, not actual, but like that you have a certain amount of Persuasion you can use during a conversation. You have to use it wisely to persuade someone.
Yeah. So kind of like a spin on, the Oblivion era of, Persuasion minigame, because like I said, obviously it wasn't in their last two BGS titles. So yeah, I mean, those are probably the biggest takeaways. I mean, it's less than 5 minutes, so like it's obviously not going to be like anything crazy. It's just kind of a handful of questions that Todd is asked by an interviewer about the game. I just thought it was interesting because like I said, it was kind of the first mention of Starfield, it seems like, in 4 months. by Bethesda. I mean, obviously people have been talking about it, but I feel like there hasn't been anything new.
The other thing that I saw from it that seemed to grab headlines is being asked how hard sci-fi is the game. And he gave an example of they originally had the game where you run out of fuel and you would have to refuel. And it became like a nuisance where you run out of fuel and you can't go anywhere. And suddenly the game just stops. And so now they have it to where basically the amount of fuel your ship can hold limits how far you can travel, but only in the like, you look at a map and you can see what the radius is that you can reach. You don't actually run out of fuel. It's just telling you what your range is for how far you've unlocked. And I guess as you get bigger engines or bigger fuel tanks or something like that, it expands how far you can travel out into the universe.
I forgot about that. There were two other things that I remember. One was like the in the video, they were having this interaction with like pirates and like you could like, you know, use the persuasion mini game or like, you know, speech checks to get the pirates to go away type of a thing. Which I thought was kind of cool. I was like, did you get boarded by pirates? So there's like random events, or is it like Mass Effect, you know, 1 or Mass Effect 2, where you like stumble onto random, you know, like derelict ships type of a thing. Kind of cool. Kind of, I like that kind of mystery in space when you like the idea of stumbling across random, obviously random planets, but just like derelict ships or just like confusing situations like that where you don't really know what's happening. And then, yeah, there was something else that I saw, what you were talking about, Tim, with the fuel situation, like how you can basically, you can modify your ship or improve your ship such that, yeah, you can do more things, which I thought is interesting. I'm really excited for that aspect of it. Like the ship customization, and then how that might play into gameplay. Being able to do stuff or more or less stuff. So, the other thing I wanted to mention that related to Bethesda kind of was, it was the 25th anniversary of Fallout 1, like the original Fallout game this week. And so people are all like clamoring, you know, at Obsidian, what are you doing? And they're like, well, we're working on literally every freaking game. We're working on 5 games right now. So
yeah, Fallout, I saw a couple of things. They had a dynamic background for Fallout where you can have the power armor and the headlamp.
I need to download
like flashes
that
on it
and see how that looks on my Xbox.
It's not super animated, but I'm using it right now for my background. It's cool just having the power armor in the background. I think it's the power armor from Fallout 4, though. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Also, this isn't not for console gamers, but I did notice that next week, the Epic Game Store's free game is going to be the Game of the Year edition of Fallout 3 for PC. So if you this Thursday, as this podcast comes out, you can redeem Fallout 3. And then I saw that they were doing this thing with Vault Boy. They sent a Vault Boy statue to all of the different studios in the Xbox Games Studios umbrella. And I guess Obsidian put out some sort of communication. I don't know if it was in Twitter or a statement to the press or what, but there was basically the head of Obsidian said when they get through all the games they're currently working on, which is a lot because they have The Outer Worlds 2, Pentiment, Avowed, Grounded. I think it's those four that when they start to think about what's next, they said that they would like another Fallout game to be in their future. And I saw, Spencer, you retweeted somebody that was basically like, well, can we figure out a way to get Fallout, the next Fallout game made that doesn't involve it being Obsidian or BGS, because we don't want to wait another 10 years. And that's what's going to happen with all these other games taking priority over it, which,
yeah,
I don't know. That's a mixed bag, right? Because it's almost like, well, those are the two studios that have handled Fallout in recent memory. And do you want to roll the dice on a third studio just to get a game sooner?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot, I think, in the last year or so, that like it's literally like the next Fallout game is so far in the future because of Starfield and the Elder Scrolls 6 that yeah, I mean, it'd be great if somebody else could work on it. And I think at this point most Fallout fans would be like, well, yeah, I think we're willing to roll the dice with another studio outside of BGS and Obsidian, just because, like we just said, I mean, BGS is, they're making, they've got Starfield and then Starfield support for the foreseeable short-term future, and then right after that, I mean, Elder Scrolls 6. So they're not going to have any space anytime soon. And Obsidian, like they even said on Twitter several times in the last couple of weeks. I mean, I know it's Twitter, but like they're being realistic too. I mean, they have, they've got Pentiment in Grounded right now. And then right after that, they'll have Avowed, Outer Worlds 2, and whatever else. I forget. Isn't there a fifth game that they have going, or is it just those four? I don't remember. Either way, I mean, they've got a ton on their plate, so they're not really going to have any time anytime soon to work on Fallout. So it is annoying that it seems like Bethesda is not willing to share, which, okay, they own it. It's their thing. Outside of Elder Scrolls, like, it's been their cash cow for, you know, the better part of 15 years, but I don't know. I just feel like it needs to, with the amount of studios that Xbox has, like, that's an IP. That'd be like if for some weird reason 343, even though they kind of suck right now, it'd be like if they were working on something and like, oh, we can't get another Halo game out for 6 or 7 years because we're working on, you know, whatever title, insert name, and then Halo, or then Microsoft is just like, eh, well, we'll let them just kind of sit on Halo and we won't have a Halo game for 10 years or something like that. I think it's at this point, I feel like someone has to step in and say, listen, we need to get this IP elsewhere because it's too valuable. It's too valuable to sit around and then there'd be 10 plus years between entries, even if the last one wasn't an exclusive, it still. But I doubt that'll happen because Xbox is notorious for being hands off. Phil Spencer and all of them are notorious for being hands off of the studios. So, I don't know.
Well, so that's a bunch of news crammed into your what we've been playing section. So I guess I'll finish off real quick with what I've been playing. Deathloop still going. I'm really far into it at this point, but I spent so much time doing random stuff that I didn't spend as much time playing the actual like story to progress things forward. So I started playing some more of that. But it's so like unique that you can just keep playing loops to like unlock stuff and find new lore and find new like ways to do things and new little hidden things that reveal details. Cause I don't know, Spencer, you don't know this yet, but the way the game is set up is it basically has four levels and then there's four times of day. So the actual layout of the level doesn't change, but what's accessible and what the enemies are like and what the different position of everything is has four different ones for the four different times of day. A couple of the locations aren't open at certain times of day. So I think it's instead of it being four levels at four different times a day, there's a couple that are blocked off. So it's somewhere between 10 and 12 different variations. And so you might find like a letter that says like these henchmen are going to unload a vehicle at this location at this time of day at this location. And that information will make something easier in a different task at a different time and stuff. So there's just like a whole bunch of stuff that you can unlock like that, that isn't necessary to beat the game because you really only need to progress the storyline of taking out the main targets. You basically have to assassinate all of them in a 24-hour period in one passage of day to beat the game. But there's all kinds of other stuff to do as well. So anyway, Deathloop, PC Building Simulator 2 came out this last week. I had purchased that on Epic Game Store because it's only available on PC right now. It's not yet available on console like the first game was. Played a little bit of that. I barely started the story, did some free building. It is more similar to the last game than I expected. I know they added a lot of stuff like water cooling and a lot of more flexibility with how you build PCs. But the actual setup of like you're running the campaign, you're running a PC shop, just like how Gus complained about the mowing simulator where you're running a garden mowing business. That's what the PC building sim is. You're fixing computers. I like it more for the free build where I can just build a custom rig that I could never afford in real life, like a $10,000 PC. And you can mock up your own computer and test how parts look and stuff. So that part of it I like. And the game isn't very expensive. I think it was only like $20 or $25. So, and then Overwatch 2. So I wanted to check this out just because it went free to play. But I logged in approximately four different times over a week span. And the first three times the queue was thousands and thousands of people. I know the first couple of times it was because of some bugs and some DDoS attacks. But then I waited like a significant amount of time, like almost a week, I think, after launch and tried. And there was still a queue. And I think I accidentally got knocked out of the queue. When it reset my queue back to waiting again, I was like, okay, I give up. So I finally tried it again I don't even know how long after launch it was the last time I tried, and I got into a match and I was playing, and then I just mid-match got kicked out, and I was like, okay, so I finally got in and started playing, and I got kicked out of the match, and I gave up and uninstalled it. I was never going to play that much of it, so it's not like I was uninstalling it because I was mad, but I just wanted to try it and compare it to the first game. And I just, you know, I don't really have the time to play Overwatch 2 that much. I really just kind of wanted to experience it, but I was so frustrated and not really caring that much, so I uninstalled it. The other big thing that I played this week that's new is I've been playing the Forza Horizon 5 anniversary update, which is awesome. So I did the whole Horizon Origins story where you do, they have basically a race for each of the Horizon games that you drive the hero car and you do a track that they've designed to kind of mimic something from that game. Like they do a canyon run for Colorado. They do like a beach run for Australia. There's a, I forget what they did for UK, but there's all that, and you get the Viper car from the cover of the first game. You unlock that if you do it all. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff. Like they've added midnight battles, which you have to do 4 street races to unlock a midnight battle. And then you beat those and you get to keep the car if you win. So that, I'm still working through those. And honestly, it's just created a reason for me to jump hardcore back into Forza Horizon 5. Which I really enjoy. I'd kind of not played it in a long time, so not in any earnest way. So it's fun to get back into that. You guys should jump back into it too, because it's a lot of fun. And they've added a bunch of achievements and stuff since last time I logged in. So there is a ton of stuff to do. New stories, new achievements. Installed. Yeah, it's great. They also added some new cars for the anniversary update. Some of them are free and some of them aren't. So that's pretty cool.
I'd like to finish up on that this week.
Well, I would recommend at least logging in once a week for the next 4 or 5 weeks, because they're doing each week as a theme, and this week is Colorado, and there's some stuff, I forget what it is, that you can only earn.
The one you never played, Tim.
No, that's not true. I bought it, played it, didn't finish it, sold it.
The one you never finished, Tim.
Yeah, I don't think I ever finished the campaign. I do still own it digitally, though.
Mm-hmm.
And they did the
not a real fan. I've got it upstairs. 1X
enhanced. Hey, I had it on disc originally way back in the day, and I played it with a coworker at my first real job out of college, and it didn't grab me originally. I don't know why. I've talked about that before on the podcast, but okay. Well, let's stop there. That's enough of what I've been playing: Forza, PC Building Sim, Deathloop, Overwatch 2. Let's talk about some news. So I don't know what order to put them in this week, so I'm just going to go with what I would have put them down with originally. So Phil Spencer this week tweeted out a picture of that Vault Boy statue I was talking about for the 25th anniversary of Fallout that everyone was, all the studios were given, and it was on his desk. And on his desk frequently are things for upcoming projects or just memorabilia from different things. And like, for example, on his desk in this picture is the Logitech cloud streaming handheld that was recently announced, which, by the way, $300 or $350 for a device that all you can do is stream on is insane. You could buy a console for that. You could buy a Steam Deck for that. So to just have a streaming device cost that much seems really high. But anyway, so the picture, everybody honed in on one thing. In the top center of this picture is a white device that looks about half the size of an Xbox Series S, maybe a third the size. And it appears to have an Xbox button on the top left and some sort of infrared receiver or something up on the top right. It's smaller than an Xbox controller, you can tell, because the controller is right next to it. So immediately everyone latched on to the fact that this is likely the rumored Keystone streaming console that would sit under TVs and be exclusively used for streaming. And Xbox responded to Phil's tweet and said, boss, what have we said? Well, I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the quote in front of me, but basically, like, boss, what do we say about having old prototypes sitting on your shelf in the background? Well, a couple of days went by and there was all kinds of rumors going around about this is the rumored streaming prototype that's going to come out, blah, blah, blah. Microsoft's statement finally was put out a few days later, and it said, the device on Phil's shelf was an old prototype of Keystone. Earlier this year, we announced that we made the decision to pivot away from the current iteration of Keystone and are taking the learnings to refocus our efforts on a new approach that will allow us to deliver Xbox Cloud Gaming to more players around the world in the future. We have nothing more to share today, end quote. So to me, I think a lot of people are like, oh, we don't believe them. This has happened with Phil. This is definitely what's going to come out. But I, in this instance, actually believe them because Keystone, they did say they were abandoning it and reworking it. And what I think Keystone is going to end up being is a handheld device with a screen, like almost like an Xbox handheld Game Gear or Game Boy, except for it'll be exclusively streaming, much like the Logitech device that just was announced and the Razer device that was just announced, where it's like a controller with a screen. Anyway, question to you guys. Do you believe what they're saying, that this is the abandoned prototype, or do you think this is the final version that'll end up coming out? And if you do think it's the old prototype, what do you think the new one is going to be? Do you think it'll be a handheld thing with a screen, like I said, or do you think they're just going for something else that's a different design, or maybe a streaming stick, or what are you hoping for?
Is that what that is in the bottom right in this picture?
Yeah, that's the Logitech device that was announced two weeks ago.
Where's the Keystone prototype? I don't see anything.
On the white box the top controller? Center. It looks like a Kinect, a white Kinect, almost. It's a very tiny box.
Yeah.
Yep, below the sword, next to the controller.
Is this like supposed to be like a Apple TV but for Xbox?
Yeah, it's supposed to be, you can use Xbox Cloud on it. So it's for people that want to do Xbox Game Pass right. Cloud and not have any physical games or download games, just only streaming.
That's probably it then. I doubt they probably were just doing damage control when people started talking about it.
But don't you think they would just not say anything? They wouldn't directly lie to our face and they say that's an old prototype of Keystone?
Well,
like
okay,
last time when he accidentally leaked the Series S.
You can't even tell how big it is.
Well, I mean, there's a controller right next to it. You can tell it's tiny.
Well, yeah. And so, like, you think that if you want something, even if it's just for streaming games, you still need a lot of hardware for the kind of processing power that you would want to bring games that people are expecting to look good. I mean, that's tiny compared to, I guess, even if it's like a Series S is like 3 times the size of that.
Yeah, but for streaming, that's massive. Like for streaming, all you need is like a Fire TV stick.
You're
or
saying
Chrome.
Like even streaming games right off Game Pass.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need any power for that. You just need a small CPU
but
and a
wouldn't
GPU.
You need some sort of hardware that could run the even if it's just installed onto the device, you'd still need the hardware to process it, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it could be really tiny. Like it could be the size of a stick of gum or a cell phone. It wouldn't have to be a box.
I wouldn't think that it would be any smaller. It would be that much smaller because you think you would still need all that hardware.
Well, I mean, think about a Chromecast or an Amazon Fire Stick. Like all of those are small, and even like an Apple TV is about half the size of one.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying with in terms of like the actual streaming itself. I'm saying to run the games. Like, where's the hardware?
That's what I'm saying is this: the Keystone device does not run any games. It only streams video
from Game Pass. So it's like, well, then how am I even going to play the game if I don't have the processing power required to play them?
Yeah, I misspoke. Okay. I'm saying Xbox Cloud with Game Pass.
Okay. So it's not actually, you're not actually playing games off of it.
Yeah, nothing's played locally. Okay. You're basically just streaming video from a cloud console.
Well, that seems kind of boring then.
Well, I mean, I think this...
You might as well just buy like a Roku or something. Like,
well, and I think that's what they're competing for, is they're trying to create a market, because right now you can only play Game Pass in the cloud. You can only play it on Android, iOS, Xbox consoles, or Windows PCs.
Yeah, so it's like how you would play HBO Max or Disney Plus.
Hang on, there's one other device that plays it, and I can't think of it. They just did it for ARM PCs, ARM equipped PCs. But Samsung TVs is the other one.
I will say that's all I'll say about it. I don't like that it's white, so it's good if that is the old prototype. They got away from the white.
They say they've abandoned this to restart it and do a different form factor. So that makes me think it's either going to be smaller or it's going to include a screen so you can play it on the go. Spencer,
I was just going to say. I mean, they could say that this is no longer the prototype. This is the old prototype, and it could still look like that. It could just have different internals or be slightly different shape or something.
Yeah,
so that's true.
It's not technically lying.
Yeah. Like slightly longer in the back, we can't see. I don't know. I think, I mean, most of the streaming devices that are out there are pretty small anyway. Like, I feel like the Apple TV is the biggest one. Like, if you compare it to a Chromecast or an Amazon Fire Stick, like, it's easily the biggest one. So,
that's true.
It could be that size. I mean, that looks like a decent enough size around the same kind of, not quite like an Apple TV because that's more of a square, like a perfect square. That looks, this looks more like a rectangle, kind of a, like you said, like a nunchuck from a Wiimote or something.
Yeah, and we can't tell how deep it is. You know, it could be very thin, right? It's just like a thin bar that sits on like the edge of your entertainment center. I don't know. To me, the value of cloud was always, well, like Samsung TVs now, you can stream it built into the TVs. So this box is going to be for people with older TVs that can't afford a console. That's the problem, though, right? Like the cloud console from Logitech that's also shown in this picture at the bottom right, it costs as much as an Xbox Series S. So unless you have to play on the go and you want to do cloud streaming, you'd be better served to get a Series S for a TV and be able to play downloaded games or streamed games. But I think the key here and the reason Microsoft is the most set up for success is they have all three types. They have disc-based gaming, downloaded-based gaming, and stream-based gaming. And when you buy a subscription to Xbox via Game Pass, you get those options plus PC if you do Ultimate. So you really, like to me, that's the only reason I ever use cloud is because it's an option for the games I already play. I would never do Stadia or Amazon Luna or anything like that. And those are why some of those things are not succeeding.
I would say, well, you can't do Stadia anymore.
Well, yeah, you're right. They won't take your money now. But like this Logitech's cloud device, if that device were between $100 and $200, I would consider it because I do stream. Like I was just on a trip this last weekend and I did Forza Horizon 5. I played the anniversary update when I first started playing it. I was playing it on a Chromebook with an Xbox controller. And this device would have made that simpler because I wouldn't have had to have all of my devices like work together. You know, I'm getting my phone for data that goes to my Chrome or my Chromebook, and my Chromebook goes to my controller. If that's all just one device, it simplifies things. But that really only makes sense for people to buy a dedicated device with a screen that doesn't even hook to a TV if all they're doing is cloud. And for $300, it just seems like a really steep price. I'm really interested to see where Xbox goes with this. I could see a world where it's a handheld, but now they would be competing against Razer and Logitech, who are clearly their partners. So are they going to compete with the partners that they've had do this already? So I don't know. Any final thoughts before we move on?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about that probably next year. I bet we don't hear anything until close to E3 time next year, to be honest, or at least Q2. So moving on, number two, Call of Duty 2023 and 2022, for that matter. So the latest rumor kind of reinforces old rumors, and it's been corroborated by multiple people, including Jason Schreier, is that there will, in fact, be no Call of Duty new game in 2023. And instead, there will be paid campaign DLC for Modern Warfare 2. They're calling it a quote-unquote premium DLC. We don't know what it'll cost. We don't know when it'll come out. And we don't know what it'll include. So it could include more than just campaign DLC. But it does seem like they're focused on the live service element for multiplayer, where all the maps and stuff are free so that everybody has the same content. And so I think we can expect it to mostly be single-player or new single-player modes. So I guess my question to you guys is, this is a big shift. This would be the first year without a Call of Duty in, like, forever. And my question is, how much do you think they will charge for standalone premium DLC for Modern Warfare 2 next year? Because in my thought, they used to charge $50 for the season pass for the Call of Duty games, the last few that had a season pass. It was the most expensive season pass of all gaming at the time. And this will be trying to keep up with revenue that they would have gotten from another game launching in 2023. So I think it's going to be quite expensive. My prediction is $50, but I could actually see a world where it's $60. What do you guys think? What do you think they can get away with? And what do you think they will actually try and get away with? Well, they will, but.
Do we think it's going to be all at once?
I don't know. The way it's been talked about, it seems like it's going to be like a one big drop. So next year, thinking, around the time that, like, we would get a game.
And it's single player only.
Well, we know it's going to be single player. We don't know if it'll have additional stuff in addition, okay, like on top.
So we're not without thinking that they might drop a Spec Ops Redux.
I honestly think that's in the cards, if I had to guess.
That makes the most sense to me. I can basically have Spec Ops be an add-on, almost like
an expansion to it.
Well, to me, it would be like a PvE, so player versus environment, which I think would be cool. I think Call of Duty could really get into that kind of thing, because I know they did it really well in Star Wars Battlefront 2 2017. One of my favorite things in that game towards the end of its lifespan was the co-op game function, where it was you and three other people played against the environment. So you play against AI. And the AI was actually, it was really bad at the beginning, but it was hard. The AI was very hard at the beginning, I think, and then they kind of tapered it off. But it did increase in difficulty, and I could see, and man, I would love that. I would love to have a player versus environment thing.
Like they're going to have that at launch. It's called Spec Ops Mode.
Okay.
And it's a co-op experience, well, kind of like what they had in the first Modern Warfare.
That would be nice. Well, then I have no idea what's going to be what the DLC is going to be. Well, then
it could be a Spec Ops expansion in addition to new campaign.
I say that the Spec Ops expansion probably makes the most sense if they do it well enough. Because I like PvE stuff. PvP stuff is like not my thing anymore. And the memes about it's like how it's like a pro gamer playing against a father of three who just got home from work and wants to decompress, and how he just like smokes the dude, and then the guy just like is like, I don't even want to play this anymore because I'm trying to play to relax after a hard day of work, and the last thing I want is some like MLG pro who all he does is play every day just smoke me all night. So that's kind of how I am. I like the PvE stuff, and I hope that Spec Ops, they kind of did it in the same vein as Star Wars Battlefront 2 2017, because I think that could be, I'd be really enjoyable, have a lot of fun. And like the biggest thing would just almost be like zombies, about how the weapon progression unlocks like separately from multiplayer. So, but you can also get like all the same guns, all the same unlocks in Spec Ops. I really hope that that's a thing. I guess we'll see. But so I'm buying the game anyway, and I'm more than happy to spend $50 if the content is worth it. And I think a Spec Ops and campaign expansion, depending on how good the campaign is, depending on how good Spec Ops is, I think it would be warranted for $50.
Yeah. I honestly, based on what they've charged in the past, I bet we're going to get it. It's either going to be, they're going to try and make it, my prediction, they're going to try and make it cheaper than a full game is, which is $70.
Yeah.
But they're going to make it expensive compared to other games DLC, which means
and they're gonna $50 to $60. They're going to have a battle pass alongside it. So they're going to be showing cash from that too. So.
Well, this game's going to sell better than the last two Call of Duties, because Modern Warfare generally does, as long as they deliver.
Well, not only that, but I mean, the overall response to Modern Warfare 2019 has been overwhelmingly positive. I knew very few people who said they didn't like it. Everybody
it does seem
it
to be one of the best
form.
Regarded of the last 5 or 10 years.
Oh, definitely. 100%. I think it's the best of the last 5 or 10 years. I mean, some people might say Black Ops 2. Is in that, and I didn't play Black Ops 2, but from the way people talk about it, it seems like a top three in the last 10.
Wow, Black Ops 2 was 10 years ago this year.
Yeah, crazy. I think Modern Warfare is definitely up there, than 2019 Redux.
Man, I'd have to go through it, but Black Ops 2 might be my favorite of the last 10 years.
Yeah, it seems like
outside
of 3
outside
well.
Of Modern Warfare.
I'm trying to think what other ones
I did not like Black Ops 3
good
or 4
that people have been. I really think they've been largely forgettable.
Well, I mean...
between Vanguard, World War II, Black Ops Cold War, which I enjoy. I played the zombies on that. I had a lot of fun on it.
I liked the story of Vanguard a lot, which I know a lot of people didn't for some reason, but I thought it was great.
I really hope that they kind of keep the Spec Ops in line with how they did zombies in Black Ops Cold War. Now, like I said, how you can have the weapons be... you can unlock the weapons, unlock the attachments for them separately from multiplayer and play with them in that. And I hope that's how it is in Spec Ops.
I'm curious, how they'll
do that.
You can
create your loadouts, like your own loadouts for that, like for a specific mission.
So, Spencer, you've stayed very quiet here. Do you have a prediction?
We're just letting you guys go.
How much you think they'll charge for a premium DLC next year?
No, I have no idea. I am more curious as to what it could be, because to me it's something like premium DLC. Like I don't know, a Spec Ops expansion doesn't really make a lot of sense for that. But they've never really done like straight story DLC. You know, like they've never had like a a new campaign or something that they've released after the launch of the main game. I mean, I guess this year will be different theoretically or allegedly if there's no game this in 2023, but I don't even know what it could possibly be. Maybe like, yeah, I don't know. I was thinking like a rehash of old game levels, but
well, it does. Know. The rumors do say campaign DLC.
Right.
It does say there will be maybe other stuff, but it seems like this is going to be a story expansion.
Right, which is what I'm saying. Which, like, they've never done that
first
before.
Time ever. Yeah.
So I don't know what it could be. Like, I don't know. I mean, like I said, the only thing I can really think of is rehashing some old missions from old games. Even though they're kind of doing that with this like main line anyway, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, with that, I guess we'll wait to hear more. What's interesting, I guess, also is this, depending on when the deal closes, likely after the release of Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 2 will likely come to Game Pass, but if they do DLC next year, that will not come to Game Pass most likely, and you'll get the Game Pass discount on because the game is on DLC or on Game Pass, but you'll still have to buy the campaign expansion separately with Game Pass. So that also, I guess, helps with monetization because DLC drives Game Pass support in a way for games that, I mean, that is part of how they support Game Pass is if you get, you know, you get hooked on a game and then you buy DLC, that DLC isn't included in Game Pass. So that's an additive sale value. Okay, so number three. I told you we'd talk about Gotham Knights, and here we are. So there's two pieces of news for Gotham Knights this week. The first is the game is played campaign co-op is up to two players, but they are releasing a four-player mode after launch, and they've given us more details on that now. So it's called Heroic Assault. It's up to four players. It's going to be free. It's coming November 29th, 2022, so a little over 4 weeks after the game comes out on October 21st. And basically, the short description is the defeat enemies complete objectives on each floor with 30 floors total. So it kind of sounds like that. Remember that Division 2 mode where you fight waves of enemies through the floors of like a building, like you're ascending a building or descending a building? Or Horde mode, right? Where you're doing like 50 waves of enemies in Gears of War. I kind of see it like that. So you clear a floor and complete all your objectives, and then you get another floor. Maybe some floors have bosses, but it's cool. I'm glad, to be honest, that the main campaign isn't four player, because I feel like if they had designed the game around up to four players, that would completely change the design of the combat spaces to make room for all the players. So I'm really happy that it's limited to only two players, because I feel like the difference between one and two is a lot simpler than the difference between one and four. Now, this leads into the second piece of news this week, which is on their Discord. I think the executive producer was revealed that the game is only 30 frames per second. If I slurred my words there, it's 30 frames per second. Now, people seem pretty up in arms about this. The quote he gave as to why is, quote, due to the type of features we have in our game, like providing a fully untethered co-op experience in our highly detailed open world, it's not as straightforward as lowering the resolution and getting a higher FPS. For this reason, our game does not have a performance or quality toggle option and will run at 30 FPS on consoles. So in some ways that makes sense to me, because he says untethered co-op experience, whereas like think of how Halo Infinite has to tether the co-op people together. You can't go more than a couple hundred meters apart from each other. You get killed and spawn back with the other person. Because in co-op, if you completely separate, they're rendering some stuff in different parts of the world for the other player. And some of that information has to be communicated to your player. And that probably is more taxing. So I want to make some excuses for them. But this also kind of does just seem unacceptable with the horsepower that modern consoles have. It just seems like there should be. My prediction is this gets added later, like 6 months from now. I bet a 60 FPS patch comes to play once they see how people are playing the game and the majority of people not using the co-op features. I feel like this is ripe to get added later. But that said, if the 30 is completely locked and the game is beautiful, I can maybe be like, I'm not so stuck in my ways for 60 FPS that I won't be able to play it. Like, I play Forza Horizon in 30 FPS because I like the beautiful open world, and the 30 is like a rock solid 30. But I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Gus, Spencer, 4-player co-op mode in addition to the 2-player campaign co-op, and then does 30 FPS make you less, or does it?
I'm fine with the 2-player co-op. Like you said, the difference between 2 and 4 would make the game so much different and like noticeably awkward if you were just playing single player. So that part of it, I don't really care about. I mean, it would have been cool if we had been able to play like all 3 of us, for example, together in the campaign. But since they're doing this 4-player mode, which sounds a little intriguing, like the 30 floors, completing objectives on each floor. I mean, that sounds interesting enough. So kind of a wash for me on that first point. I don't really have much of a problem with it. And then I saw some of the 30 frames per second stuff on Twitter this week, and I was like, man, that kind of sucks. But I like the rationale. Even if I'm not going to be playing co-op all of the time, you know, I would be surprised if I'm playing this game in co-op, the campaign in co-op, more than 50% of the time, more than 30% of the time, really. So like, technically it doesn't really matter for me, but I do really think the idea of having an untethered experience in the open world is pretty sweet. Like, that's super cool to me. Like, you could be on a completely opposite side of the map from your partner, your co-op partner, while they're doing something. I wonder if, I guess, like, the exception obviously would be if somebody triggers a story mission, then like you get obviously pulled into that. But like if you're just kind of screwing around, you know, doing a challenge or whatever, I don't even know. That's kind of cool, having it be untethered like that. Like you said, obviously Halo is the classic example of getting teleported forward to where your co-op partner is, assuming they're further along in the level than what you were doing. So not having to worry about that, it's kind of neat in the open world. I could see that being really frustrating. So yeah, it's disappointing. Maybe like you said, it's something that gets added later, a higher frame rate option. Maybe next year, you know, for the people that aren't playing it strictly in co-op.
But you did make me think of one thing, though. It'd be nice if it was 60 in single player and it only forced you to 30 if you were playing with someone. Like, that would be more understandable, although still not really understandable because the second player isn't rendered locally. The only stuff that should be taxing your system is the stuff that has to be calculated for multiple players, like the damage on enemies that both can see and the inventories and the stuff on the map that's changing for both players. So I'm sure there is a CPU load and memory load that is added by the second player, but it's not like you're rendering, you know, split screen where you have to render the game environment in two different perspectives. So these are things that usually can be solved. So in some ways it's understandable, and in other ways it's not. But also, just give us a 60 FPS mode for single player only, because I guarantee you 80% of the people are only going to play this game in single player.
Yeah.
And even me, like, I'm going to play mostly in single player, and then if Gus gets the game or you get the game, I'll probably, if I'm ahead of you guys, I'll probably, you know, fall back and replay some missions to play in co-op just to have that fun experience with friends. So Gus.
Yeah, I agree about most of everything you guys are saying, but I did want to, I guess, talk more about the 30 FPS before we get too far away. I just don't get it. What is, like, did they decide to just, well, are we too stupid to understand why they wouldn't make it 60? And so they said that, basically. Like, it's more than just this.
Like, did they're basically blaming co-op that the systems they have in the game that enable co-op is the reason they couldn't hit 60.
Why?
And, well, I mean, they're
old software or old hardware or something.
No, it's like I said, something involved with how they calculate things like inventory and damage and world state and all that stuff for co-op, even when you're not in co-op, requires them to put some of the processing power towards that, which isn't allowing them to hit 60. So they don't have a 60 mode, which
weird. Why not?
Your reaction is exactly the community's reaction, which is that every other game does it, right? Like, yeah, there's very few 30 FPS only games
these
days.
Is it so, like, what, are they trying to save money? Is this, like, some sort of, like, cost-saving measure?
No, I don't think that. They didn't mention that at all.
They just said it, and then they didn't expand, basically. They're like, because I said so, and then moved on.
I don't know. I mean, like, look in our notes right there under 3B. That's their statement. That's all the context we have. This was on Discord, so it's not like they did an interview or anything.
I guess.
It seems weird. It does.
I wouldn't say that, like, I'm not going to buy it because of that, but it is, like, that's, like, an odd way to just, like, go about it. Just, like, say that and be like, and then there will be no questions, and then move on.
Yeah, well, part of it's the context, right? It was on Discord. I'm not in that Discord, so I didn't go read it myself. I pulled this from a news article. Actually, where did I pull it from? Video Game Chronicles, where I saw the quote. But, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I also, like, that means the only 60 FPS experience will be PC, which is the way things used to be before consoles started regularly hitting 60 in this generation. Some games hit 60 last generation, but still some didn't. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to react to this. I obviously bought it, and I'll be interested to see when Digital Foundry does their usual breakdown of frame rates across consoles. Are they hitting a locked 30? Because if it's an unstable 30 and it's like 24, 20 at times, then it's going to be like, okay, come on, guys. Like, we needed to dial something
it's
back.
It's got
to
be a locked 30. Like, modern technology, there's no way it isn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, games have come out in a pretty bad state in the last few years. But there is hope, because remember, they dropped last-gen consoles. So they were trying to hit last-gen at one point. Imagine trying to hit 30 FPS on last-gen consoles. Like, if they could only hit 30 on next-gen, what was that going
to
look
imagine
like?
Imagine a 2013 VCR Xbox trying to hit 30 on this.
At 720p with all the time.
Maybe
level of detail.
You'd think more people would learn
every step you take
Cyberpunk.
Five.
You know?
Like, well, I mean, maybe they did. They
right,
canceled
that's what I'm saying.
The last-gen versions.
Right. I'm just saying in general, like, you'd think that, like, people would look at Cyberpunk and they'd be like, okay, maybe trying to release our 2022 video game on a 2013 piece of hardware is not a good idea if we want to keep this thing running at, like, even a decent clip. I don't understand, like, I feel like you put it in our group me at least once a week, Tim. You're like, oh, you can get a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X at every store nowadays. It only took 2 years. Like, all right, we're at that point. It's time to start cutting last-gen versions. Or you figure out a way to make it run on, like, a 1X or something, you know, or a PS4 Pro. I don't know. I don't care. The rationale, I don't care if you think you can make more money because you can loop in those people that haven't upgraded yet. No, those people need to be dragged forward. They either need to be on a Series X, they need to be on a Series S, I don't care, buy a PS5, buy a PC, like, spend $2,000 on a nice PC. I just, like, I have no patience for games getting neutered because they're trying to work on a 2013 Xbox or a 2013 PlayStation 4. Like, it's stupid.
I'm all for everyone being able to play as within reason, but also video gaming is not a cheap hobby, right? Like, even buying an used...
But it's as cheap as it's ever been, like, inflation-wise.
Yeah, but, like, a used 2013 Xbox still goes for an insane amount of money for someone, like, that is, you know, not well off or, you know, struggling to make ends meet. So it's not like you can't have the expectation that everyone can game. That's just not realistic. That's like saying anyone can play golf. Yeah, golf is an expensive hobby. You have all the equipment, you have the tee times, you have the course fees. Like, there are things that cost money that aren't accessible to everyone. But gaming also has a lot of free to play experiences. And now you can play them through streaming or on a PC, a low spec PC. So I don't know. I'm also of the opinion, right, if you have to launch your game cross-gen, make a next-gen version of it that is the ideal version, and then don't announce a last-gen version until late in the game, and then once you've finished your late-in-the-game version, see how bad you would have to cut it to make it run on last-gen consoles and see if you can get there. And if you can't, then don't do it. So, like, I don't care. If you make Gotham Knights for next-gen, and it's an amazing 4K... 60 FPS experience, and then 6 months later, maybe you release an Xbox One version, but it's really stripped down. We're talking 720p, 30 FPS. I think that's fine, but come out with it later. Hit your target on your ideal vision first, and then see if you can strip it down for a release later, because the audience will still be there clamoring for it, or they will have upgraded their console. And by the way, you probably are charging $70 for the next gen version and $60 for that later version. So you probably are going to get more money anyway. So I think there are ways to do it that no one is taking advantage of now, which is launch on the current gen consoles and then later see if you can back into the last gen consoles without compromising your vision or compromising the game. And if you are compromising it, compromise it in a way that doesn't affect the gameplay. Like I said, I think consumers would be way more accepting of 720p resolution on Xbox One for a game that was designed for Series X. But instead, they're always trying to hit 1080p or 900p. And I think they stretch themselves too thin. Like, it's a subpar experience on a 10-year-old console. That is what you should expect. Like, you can't run the same games on 10-year-old hardware for PC. It just doesn't work. You can't run a modern game on 10-year-old hardware at 120 FPS. You have to, over time, upgrade your stuff, and it's expensive. So anyway, I think we can stop there. We beat it up enough. I already bought the game. I don't pre-order games except for right before launch if I want to preload them, which I did in this case. And I'm a huge DC Comics fan, so I'm going to play regardless, even if it's bad. And if it's bad, you're going to hear all about it from me on this show. So much like Avengers, there's going to be good, there's going to be bad. I'm hoping there's more good than bad. Avengers, I liked the campaign. I didn't like after that. I have a feeling this game I'm going to like most of it, but there are a few things I can already tell I'm going to nitpick. So my prediction is this game's going to have like a Metacritic in the 70s or 80s. It's definitely not, doesn't reek of a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 type game, but I don't want to prejudge it. I bought it. We'll see what it's like. Number four, moving on. Saints Row, back in the news, finally after relaunch. What was the launch date? It launched in August, right? Right, Spencer? So it's been out almost 2 months, right?
Shaking my head. I think it was like August 23rd, I want to say.
Yeah, so we're coming up on 7-8 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple of things. First of all, they announced the first major patch for the game is coming in November. It's going to have over 200 fixes and stability improvements. So they said that they basically shifted all their resources to patches and quality of life improvements. And they had announced expansions because they have a season pass, but they're first focusing on stability and quality of life, as they should, because there were a lot of bugs at launch. Now, other things that are going to be included in this November patch, which I'm looking in my notes, I don't think they've dated the patch yet. They just said it's coming in November. So they also said update will include many requested improvements, including reduced repetition in some activities, making challenges more rewarding, improving vehicle management, a revamp of rumble and haptic features, and more. And that's in addition to the 200 fixes and stability improvements. So sounds pretty robust. It's a little bit late. November is 3 months after launch, so that is kind of a long time to wait for the big fixes. But I'm glad they're putting the priority on that. Then they say more bigger and better improvements coming after this, also including more quality of life improvements. The other interesting thing from this blog, they also mentioned that the DLC for the game is coming in 2023. So they will have expansions that'll be part of the season pass or sold a la carte. Those are coming in 2023, but right now they're focused on quality of life and stability improvements. The other interesting thing from this blog is the blog says that 1 million players have played the game since launch, which sounds low to me, but much higher than Agents of Mayhem. And I pulled some numbers for comparison. So the exact quote from them is, "We are so excited that Saints Row is finally out and in your hands. More than 1 million players have taken Santo Iso by storm and begun to build their criminal empire as the Saints." So it says more than 1 million players, which tells me it's less than 1.5 million, but more than 1 million. So for comparison, I dug up some numbers using Wikipedia and financial documents. Agents of Mayhem, which was their last major release, released in August of 2017. By February of 2018, which is what, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, 7 months later, they had sold 300,000 copies. And we know that because they had to disclose that in their financial statements as part of the acquisition by Embracer, which was announced in February of that year. So in 7 months, they only sold 300,000 copies, which is abysmal for a medium budget AAA game. That's why that game obviously died on the vine. They didn't do any DLC support, and they didn't even patch it. Like, there's DLC with that game that you currently cannot play the game if that DLC is installed on your machine. That's how broken it is. So when they say over a million for Saints Row in roughly 8 weeks, that's a lot better than Agents of Mayhem. But I mean, there are simulator games that had a million players in their first 2 months on the market. Like, sounds really low to me. Spencer, Gus, any reaction to a million players?
No, I think you're right. I think that is low. I think it's a lot lower than they probably would have expected. But considering they kind of behind the eight ball from the beginning with just how dramatically people were kind of opposed to the tonal shift of the game. And then not only were they like completely turning Saints Row on its head, but they didn't do a good job with it from a technical standpoint. Like, it's one thing to make like a bad game, but then it's another thing to make a bad game that people don't like because of, you know, X, Y, and Z story reason or, you know, tonal reason. Like, having one of those things be bad is one thing, and you can usually survive and do pretty well for yourself, but having both a technically poor game and then just everything else about it being less, people being less enthusiastic about, I think that's tough. I think a million copies, I mean, yeah, it's not great, but I think probably a lot of that was just off of brand name more than anything else. But the first part of what you were talking about, the November patch with 200 plus fixes and stability improvements and various quality of life updates, that's what I like to hear. So when I buy this game in approximately 2 months for $25, it'll be in a good state. I can't wait. I'm excited. I'm excited for this to be my Christmas break. You know, I take a week off of work, game.
Yeah. You know, podcasts don't say this enough because most podcasts play games right when they come out so they can talk about them on their show or drive YouTube video views or whatever. And, you know, on this show, we typically play a lot of stuff off our backlogs in addition to new stuff. But the secret of not playing games when they come out is they're always better later. Like Gus was just talking about Shadow of War. He's playing the game in a perfectly patched state with the microtransaction riddled launch has been gone from the game for a long time. And he's playing it on newer hardware than what it launched on with probably higher frame rates and higher resolution, or at least maxing out what it was capable of at the time. And he didn't pay for it because it ended up being on a subscription service. So just remember that there's always hype when games come out, but they're always also better later. And so sometimes you can't you hold yourself back. Like Gotham Knights, I am such a huge DC fan. I have a DC Comics tattoo that I'm going to play it. It's a DC Comics game. It's coming out. I want to play it. I'm super hyped. But those of you that buy it later or wait to hear reviews or whatever are going to get a better experience. It's going to get patched. It's going to improve. So I'm with Spencer. Saints Row was buggy at launch. It wasn't quite what I wanted from a Saints Row game, but they seem to be doing the right thing. They're putting the time into it. So if the patches improve the game and the price drops, we get the best of both worlds, right? This game is going to be hugely improved come December. I bet in the end of year sales, this will easily be $30 or $40. And it, in some ways, I hate to say wait until it's cheaper, because you also, if you like games, you want to support the studios and the games so that more of them get made. But also, the product needs to meet you halfway, right? And in this one, it was a buggy mess. According to reviews, I haven't played it myself, but it seems the consensus was. So I'm also with Spencer. I want to wait till $40 is probably where I would buy it. But it's not about the price, it's about the time. I'm waiting for it to get this major patch with the 200 fixes and see how that affects the game. And if I see consensus that that is a huge improvement, that'll be my like, okay, I'm going to jump in. Plus, I don't need a game right now. I've got Plague Tale, I've got Gotham Knights, and then Modern Warfare. So once things die down after that and it gets a little bit slower, although things aren't going to slow down much since we have so much coming out in February and March of next year, but there's always ebbs and flows in the industry. So I don't expect, Gus, that you're ever going to play Saints Row. This seems like it's one that's mostly for me and Spencer, but
yeah, the luster of Saints Row is lost on me. And this game with its poor launch didn't really help that. I liked 3 a lot. I loved 3. It was a great game, but I haven't really touched it since. not saying that anything that came after was bad and that I wouldn't have enjoyed it, but I'm just kind of like past that phase, I think.
Yeah. I will say from my last thought on Saints Row before we move on is I do wish, looking at the gameplay video and the reviews, I do wish they had modernized it more than they did. I think some of the comments that people feel like it kind of feels like a game from a decade or a generation before definitely looks like that in gameplay video to me. And I don't feel nostalgic for that. So I wish it had been modernized more in the UI and maybe the look and feel slightly more than they did. But I am eager to check it out eventually. But right now I'm sticking with Deathloop and the other stuff on my plate. Okay, with that, let's move to some quick hits. I got three quick hits for you this week, and they are quick hits. Number one, Lunar Shift Controller has now been confirmed. We talked about this when it leaked. This is the second in the Shift Controller series, I believe. There was a Blue Shift or an Aqua Shift. I forget what it was called. $69.99. It's available now. Number two, Xbox Cloud Gaming is coming to the Meta Quest VR headset, which sounds way cooler than it is because it's not going to be 3D VR. It's just a massive 2D screen, like a movie theater, like you're sitting in a movie theater within the goggles. And so you're really just playing it'll in your head in the goggles. It'll look like you're playing on like a 1,000-foot movie screen, but you're sitting in the audience. It's not like it wraps around you in 3D, like true VR. It's a 2D viewing experience that will simulate playing on a massive screen in your home. But no date was given. It was part of the MetaQuest event they had this last week to announce some new Quest stuff. And then number three on the quick hits, Silent Hill. We've had teases that Silent Hill is coming back. We've had some little leaks that there's going to be multiple Silent Hill games in development. Well, we're going to finally find out what some of that is with, they have an event happening, a live stream that is going to be, what's the date? Wednesday, October 19th at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. So we are likely to find out about one or multiple Silent Hill games that are coming soon in that. And so I guess that I'm looking at my calendar real quick. September 19th is Wednesday. So by our next show, we should know what's happening with Silent Hill. Not a franchise that I'm nostalgic for. I don't really play horror anyway, but I know there's been a lot of clamoring for it. I'm interested to see if Hideo Kojima is involved at all. My assumption is no, and that this is going to be Bloober Team or somebody else that is working on it, maybe a Konami studio themselves. So, Gus, Spencer, any thoughts on those three quick hits?
People are excited about Silent Hill. It's one of those franchises that has a loyal fan base in the ether.
For some reason.
Yeah.
I like the Lunar Shift controller. I think it looks really cool.
Yeah, that's a controller you should have waited
for. Yeah, I want to see one in person to see how like the color shifts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So what Spencer's referring to is I bought a new controller this week. I bought the, what's it called? The blue.
Blue Shift.
The Volt Blue.
Electric Shift. I don't know. Electric Slide.
I think it's called Blue Shock.
Blue Shock. No.
Yeah, I bought the Blue Shock. Hang on, the box is right here.
Maybe it is Blue Shock. I thought Blue Shock.
No, Shock Blue. It's called Shock Blue. Hmm. So I bought that one because I had a $30 gift card.
Hold it up to the camera. I want to see it.
You know what? It's in the drawer right here. Hang on. It's in my desk. This is the controller I use for PC and mobile.
I have the Best Buy blue one.
Well, no. So that it's similar to that one.
That looks the same.
But it's the Series X controller. See, it has the share button.
Yeah, but other than that, oh, and the white on the back's different.
Yeah, it's USB-C on top and it's white on the back.
I had that one and I traded it in. I think.
So the reason I got it,
the blue one is cooler.
Is I had the really old
heard that zipping up.
Yeah, that was my case for it. I have an Xbox One controller that was the gray one with the green understicks way back in the day, and that was my like controller I had in a little zipper case that I would take when I go places. So I used it for PC and mobile gaming. And the left rumble broke and it would basically rumble like all the time. So you'd be just like in Forza, you'd be driving, and then suddenly the left half of the controller would just go nuclear.
How does this happen to you, Tim?
I don't know, because I've talked about it. Like, I'm the most gentle person with my controllers. Like, look at this controller. Look, it's in this. I bought extra Elite Series cases, and I keep my travel controllers in these cases so they don't get banged up.
It's wild, the amount of, like, controllers that you break. Because it's like, I think I've broken, like, a couple controllers,
And it's but I don't break them. They break themselves. Well, like, right. I don't and even drop
me,
them.
It's like, what happens to me is I will have buttons that stick is the only thing that happens to me. I've never
That's what
had,
happened
like,
to my
like,
Elite.
The internals go wrong like that.
Yeah. So anyway, I bought the Shock Blue because I had a gift card to Best Buy that I got as a reward for buying a new TV. Like you get like a reward points back and it expires in a few weeks. And so I was like, okay, what do I need that I could spend on? And because Prime Day had Xbox controllers on sale, I had Best Buy price match a controller pricing. And then I used the gift card and I only had to pay like $10 or $15 for a controller because that one was broken and I'm going to take the batteries out of it and let my kids play with it. But the only options at Best Buy were blue, red, the shock or the electric green, white, black. And I think one of the weird ones. Oh, it was the new mineral green camo one, which I didn't want camo because if I am doing mobile gaming, like sometimes I take it with me to the car dealership when I get my wife's oil changed. I don't want to be sitting with a giant green camo controller in the waiting room, like just like very ostentatious. Nerd. So instead, I'm going to have the bright blue controller that is still super nerdy, but at least it's not camo.
Yeah, I have the Aqua Shift controller on my Amazon wishlist, but it's currently $91, so I don't think they make that one anymore. So I'll probably just remove that. I'm happy with my Elite Series 2 and my 20th anniversary. Tim, I had that controller. I have that controller, or maybe I have the one that Gus has, but I was one of the ones that I traded in for my Elite Series 2 because the trigger was sticking.
The controllers that I have here at my girlfriend's apartment are my Lunar, like the Lunar module one.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I love that one.
Still have that
one with like the gold, which I love. And then I have my Best Buy edition blue one here.
So this blue one was actually my first Series XS controller that didn't come with a console because I have the white one that came with the Series
you
S, the black one that came with the
you?
Series X. Is that a yeah. Series X controller?
Yeah, yes, it is. You nerd.
Which is actually, that's the one that I play with normally. I lied. I thought I said I'd use the normal black one. I actually use the 20th, which you'll remember.
I lost that controller. I don't know
it
where
wouldn't,
it is.
It wouldn't work. I talked about on here how my controller wouldn't work, and then all of a sudden now it just works again. And don't even talk to me about, well, I guess you lost yours after you got it. Mine was lost in Guam for a week.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. But wait, which one of you're saying your 20th anniversary edition is the one that just started working again?
Yeah, it just randomly started working like a few months ago. Like because I bought it and then I got it. I had to go through the whole thing of it being stuck in Guam for like a week and then via Guam to Hawaii and then here. And then I used it for like a month and then it just like it wouldn't connect anymore or like wouldn't turn on. And I was like, what the heck? I was so mad. I mean, I just gotten it and then I went back to a normal black one for a little bit and then I went, tried it again and it was fine. And so I was like, I don't know what's going on with it, but it's worked ever since. Probably just a me problem.
Well,
user error.
So Spencer, the reason it's lost is, we recently converted the room that had all my extra gaming stuff stored in it to a bedroom for one of my daughters. And so I had to box up everything in that room. And some of those boxes got put in a closet. Some of those boxes are stacked here in my office. And some of them are somewhere else that I forget. And I don't know which box I put it in when we were moving everything. And so I went to look for it the other day and I was just like getting exhausted because there's so many boxes, stacks. So yeah, I literally don't know where that one is. It's in the house. It's in a box somewhere. I just don't know where it is. And yeah, but yeah, so that's now my PC controller and my cloud controller is that blue one, which I actually used this last weekend when I played Forza Horizon 5 from Kentucky. I was in Kentucky. We rented a house there for a visit, take my kids to do some activities, and it worked great. By the way, just aside for Spencer, the Airbnb we stayed at, the best Wi-Fi I've had at any rental ever. They had either gigabit or 600 Mbps Comcast internet at this, and they had a solid router, and the T-Mobile 5G service there was fast, like 600 Mbps as well. So I was sitting pretty. Xbox cloud gaming worked perfectly, top tier, because their internet was so good, which usually when I stay at places for travel, it's crappy internet and the Xbox cloud gaming kind of glitches out a bit. So it was kind of nice to, I didn't take a console or any travel stuff. All I took was a controller and a Chromebook on this trip. So cloud streaming or nothing. But yeah, so that is it this week. We went a little bit longer than I intended to, but it was a good discussion. So Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Appreciate your time. And if you have any questions, please email us, email address at the top of the show, or our Twitter handles, which are mine. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim Shelton.
And I am Spencer Rain. You can follow me on Twitter at Makes It Rain.
And I'm Gus Harden.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at MultiformPod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.